previously on Supermates.
We're going to hop in our DeLorean, drive 88 miles per hour, and travel back in time to the decade where men wore pastel and women had shoulder pads.
Like a linebacker.
That's right, the 80s, and more specifically, the toys of the 80s. I remember that Christmas I got He-Man and Battle Cat. I actually had all the figures and all the accessories up to a certain point. I really literally did collect them all, you know.
Including She-Ra.
I was going to get to that.
The toy I wanted at the beginning of the 80s was Great Shape Barbie and Sun Gold Malibu Barbie. And I loved Strawberry Shortcake. And that is one doll I still have from when I was a little girl.
Oh, okay.
That's one I do have. I have my original Strawberry Shortcake. But I'm a big dork. And I went through this phase that I would rename all of my dolls. And I would write on the back of the doll's head or their back or, you know, whatever, I would write their name and the date.
They got me with their half-hour commercial. They did the first miniseries, and everybody, you know, they advertised that thing. Everybody was going to watch it. This was like Roots for the, you know, the elementary
school
set.
The kinder set,
yeah. You had to watch the G.I. Joe miniseries. The mega playset of all time, the USS Flag.
Where would we put that? The hardware store was right next to the drugstore where my mother worked, and she actually was able to give me a Cabbage Patch kit. Some lady actually started to come up to Mom, "Did you get one of them dolls?" Because she knew that Mom had a little girl. And Mom's like, she said, "I put it in the trunk real quick, got in the car, and the guy stood there, you know, the manager stood there while she drove away very quickly."
Kind of cute, but just the whole deal of the head coming up out of the cabbage just kind of... it just kind of freaked me out. It's like the pod people or something.
Wonder Woman.
Oh, yeah.
And my dad and I, that was one show that me and my dad watched together. Now, I'm sure he was watching it for a little bit different reason than I was.
Yes. Yes. I can think of two. Oh.
And now, the epic conclusion of 80s toy memories.
Do you, Chris, take this woman to be your lawfully wedded wife? Do you promise to barrage her with obscure facts concerning comics, movies, TV shows, and toys?
I do.
And Cindy, do you take this man-child to be your lawfully wedded husband? Do you promise to humor him by engaging him in his obsessive ramblings, for better or worse, in pre-crisis or in post?
Sure, why not?
Then by the power invested in me by the High Father of the Fourth World, I now pronounce you Supermates. You may podcast with the bride.
Coming from the farthest reaches of the universe to challenge the worst villains on Earth are the most powerful heroes ever in the Battle of the Superpowers Collection. Hark! Batman being called to stop a dastardly deed. New from Kenner Superpowers Collection, the Batmobile figures with power action sold separately.
Stop, you Joker! Don't laugh yet! Release the war! It's a flash! Activate Batarang! Double Batman? Not my Batmobile! I'll need safe, too!
Is this the end of our heroes in the Batmobile? You decide!
The next toy line that rocked my world came out in 1984 and featured Wonder Woman, and that was the fabled Superpowers toy line, which almost every DC fan holds in the highest of regards as probably the greatest toy line they've ever made. Superpowers was made by Kenner, who had made the Star Wars toys, and they really put a lot of care and attention into the figures, just like light years ahead of the sculpts on any other toy line out there. They had the power features. You squeeze their legs and they punched, and you squeezed Aquaman's arms and his legs kicked like he was swimming. And the only thing was the power features didn't hold up to play real long. I mean, and the figures did tend to get a little wobbly because of the power action feature. But
most of that was just done with rubber bands, wasn't it?
No, they had like, I don't really know. I mean, they had like little springs and things, and like if the arm that they had, like a, instead of a usual peg, there was like a little, little disc mechanism that it sat on, that something inside moved. I never really took one apart too much to look, but, they didn't break, but the power action just kind of quit working after a while. But it didn't matter because, you know, that just got you in the door. I mean, you know, they looked so good, it didn't matter. Now, I remember seeing ads in the comic books for them, and Mego had been out of business for 2 years, and you just couldn't, Mego's around, I understand some places Mego's were still on the shelves, some of the old remaindered ones, but you couldn't find any around here. I mean, and I was like out, you know, most of my Mego's had broken or, you know, they were missing parts. So, I mean, my superheroes were, you know, they were on life support. So I was so grateful to see somebody making new ones. But the ads on the back of the DC Comics, they showed a kid squeezing Superman's legs and he's punching a comic drawing of Lex Luthor. But you, even though you saw the kid holding it, you couldn't really tell how big the figures were. I was thinking they were Mego sized. So I was slightly disappointed that they were smaller, but I got over it real quick.
Yeah.
Because they were awesome. And I remember getting the Sears catalog, which that in and of itself was a huge event to get the Sears wish book. And I seem to recall it coming out in September. So pretty much right after we went back to school, the wish book would come out for Christmas. And I remember, you know, coming home and the wish book being there and then like circling things. It's like, I want this. And they had the Batmobile and Batman and Robin from Superpowers. And the Batmobile was pretty much the contemporary comic book Batmobile. It wasn't the, you know, every other Batmobile had always been based on the TV show. This was the 1980 Dick Giordano designed Batmobile. And I desperately wanted that. And I don't know why, but I come home from school one day, and this is another instant while I was spoiled by my mother. And my mom's like, go look on your bed. And I go into my room, and there on the bed was the Batmobile and Batman and Robin. And that was my first Superpowers toys. And I was just like, I was in heaven. And then between my birthday and Christmas that year, I got everybody else from the first wave.
See, I wonder why she went ahead and gave it to you.
Because it was Batman and Robin and the Batmobile. And she probably was afraid, okay, if I don't give it to him, he's going to buy this if he sees it, if he's got enough money. Especially the Batman and Robin. I might not be able to swing the Batmobile. But I got the Hall of Justice for my birthday that year, I know. Because I remember getting it for my birthday. I guess it was birthday when I turned 10. Because it would have been, 84. Came out in 84. So that to me, that is my favorite playset of all time. Grayskull's close, but the Hall of Justice is just freaking awesome. It's a great playset. It's kind of weird that it's cast in yellow instead of white. But the comic books, they colored it yellow for some reason. So I guess it's more colorful. Colorful that way.
Right.
And, you know, it's got like a trap door with a jail. It's got the elevator. It's got a console table where they can sit around. I mean, it's just, it just folds out into like three different rooms.
I think it's so sweet. Every time we go up to Union Terminal, the Cincinnati Museum, the Natural History Museum, is located in the Union Terminal. And every single time we go up there, and we go up there probably about once a year, Chris will always be like, the theme song for Super Friends. He sings it the whole way when we're driving up to
Union
Terminal.
Or I put the CD in, because that's what the Hall of Justice is based on.
I know, but what's
really... I'm telling them that in case they didn't know.
But what's really hilarious is the fact that now our kids do it.
Yeah.
They'll even start doing it before Chris does.
Well, a funny story about that. When I was in second grade, our class went to Cincinnati Zoo. And my mom had worked in Cincinnati at one time and had been to Cincinnati many times. We were about an hour away from Cincinnati, so it's someplace we go fairly often. And we're on the bus, we're going up the interstate, and my mom's like, okay, here in a minute, I want you to look out this window and you'll see something neat. And so I'm looking, and then boom, there's the Hall of Justice. I mean, the freaking Hall of Justice, real. And I'm like, it's the Hall of Justice! And every kid on that bus ran to that side of the bus and looked out that window.
I'm surprised you all didn't turn it over.
I am too. And, you know, after that, who cared about seeing a bunch of animals at the zoo? We saw the freaking Hall of Justice. I don't care about seeing a zebra crap. I saw the Hall of Justice.
It's better than my school trip to the Cincinnati Zoo.
You saw a naked man walking across the street with a washcloth or something, didn't you?
Uh-huh. Oh, my heavens.
Yeah. Well, maybe we should move on from that.
Yes. Scarred for life.
The first series of superpowers, you know, it had like the main DC characters and the main DC villains. And then the second series was really getting the cool territory because it put out characters you didn't think you'd ever get figures of. Like you got a Martian Manhunter figure. And even though Mego had made a Green Arrow, I didn't know it at the time or didn't remember it on the card back. So you got a Green Arrow and you got Firestorm, Shag. There's Firestorm. You got Firestorm. who was big on the Super Friends. The Super Friends cartoon had come back in conjunction with the cartoon, with the toy line. And it had been off the air for a few years, and they revamped it as Super Friends, the Legendary Superpower Show. And the animation still looked the same, but they added Firestorm, and they added the Jack Kirby Fourth World villains, Darkseid, Kalibak, the Sod, and the Parademons. And they were the big villains of the second series. And, in fact, in the first year they were out, Superpowers was out, you could join a fan club. And so I sent in, you know, it was kind of like the flag points, but I sent in proofs of purchase and got the fan club kit. And it came with a newsletter, a poster that was signed by the superheroes, and something else I can't remember. But that newsletter, which I still got somewhere, it said, "Darkseid is coming." So you knew you were going to get a figure of Darkseid, and it showed Green Arrow, too, and I think maybe Red Tornado. So you knew you were going to get those guys. I was like, oh, this is awesome. So that's really where Darkseid became the big bad of the DC Universe. He fought Superman, and then he fought the Justice League in the JSA in a crossover, but he was not the, you know, big DC bad guy until the superpowers. So that's kind of the thing that cemented him in that role. Unfortunately, the third series, they started screwing around with the line, and they threw in some characters that just they made up, and you've got some great figures like Plastic Man and Captain Marvel and Cyborg, who's the only figure I've never had in that line because I picked Captain Marvel over him because I saw them both one day, didn't have enough money for both, and I thought, I like the Teen Titans, I like Cyborg, but Captain Marvel's more important, he's Captain Marvel, so I bought Captain Marvel. And I made the mistake because I could get a Captain Marvel now cheaper than I could the Cyborg.
A little bit.
So I've never had Cyborg, but one of these days. But they threw in some really strange character choices, and it killed the line, which really sucked. And it was really disheartening to, you know, figure out that, you know, you didn't have the internet, you didn't have even Tome Arts or magazine or something to tell you the line's canceled. You just kind of figured out. I don't see them anymore. They must not be making them. But before they went out, they did offer a mail-in Clark Kent figure. And now that was really exciting, not only because they're making a Clark Kent, but the commercial for it was completely legit because they had Mark McClure as Jimmy Olsen from the Superman, Christopher Reeve Superman movies, advertising that you can send in for the Clark Kent action figure. He has power action just like Superman. And he, like, looks at him and goes, "Superman? Clark Kent?" And he, like, looks at the camera like, you know. So it was a great conversion. But it's like, okay, this is like, they used a real Jimmy Olsen. This is cool. So I remember sending in for that thing. And it said, may take 8 to 14 weeks. This is where I am exactly like Ralphie Parker from A Christmas Story. I check the mailbox every day for that figure. And let me tell you, it took every bit of those 14 weeks. I think the line was canceled by the time I got it. If it wasn't, it was close. But man, I was glad to have that Clark Kent figure. It was awesome. But, you know, I mean, I had missed out on the Mego Secret Identity figures, obviously. I never thought in a million years anybody make a Clark Kent figure. So it was great to have him. But unfortunately, there were a lot of cool unproduced characters we found out later that they were in the works to get made in the superpowers, like Man-Bat and characters like that, Blue Devil, and they just never came to be, but it's still, you know, it's still pretty much the top.
Well, you talk about, you know, figures that weren't made, that, you know, were advertised and things like that. What about Wonder Woman and the Star Riders?
Yeah, we need to invest, that would be worthy of doing a show on sometime. We need to do like a
toys that never were.
That never were type thing. Yeah, unproduced toys. It's like maybe we wrote Brian Hyler in on that one.
Oh, Brian.
Yeah, Palatoy. He that's the man. He knows the stuff. So that'd be cool. Well, one thing, more thing about superpowers. The cartoon, the last season, they jettisoned the old superpowers design, the Super Friends designs, and they went with the Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, praise be his name, designs that were.
Do you have to say that every time you say
I'm
that
contractually
name?
Obligated.
Okay.
Or Shag will come and like break my elbow or something. But anyway.
Not even your kneecap. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I won't be able to draw. Yeah. But anyway. Yeah. The last season of Superpowers, they really like refreshed the look, and it actually had, you know, kind of, not that it got adult where kids couldn't watch it, but they jettisoned some of the more sillier elements. The stories were a little more smartly written, and you know, you get. Adam West came in as Batman the last two seasons, did the voice, and then you get the greatest episode ever, The Fear, that actually, the first time Batman's origins ever put in anything, I mean, outside of comics.
And you have to say this when you talk about Adam West. I'm sorry, but that man has a voice like butter.
Like butter, okay.
I think you've
mentioned that before, but we'll put it in again. Why not?
I can't help it. We met him at a Comic Con. Oh, gosh. It was before we had kids.
Oh,
so it's
like
been 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I can't help it. I mean, he's, like, old enough to be my grandfather. And, you know, I shook his hand, and he kissed me on the cheek. And I was just like, he's like, hello there. And I'm like, hey, be glad I like these things.
Yeah, I'm not. Hey, you know, I haven't yet met Yvonne Craig, but I know she's, you know, hey, that runs deep, you know.
Kalibak, Tassad, it is I, Darkseid. I command you to listen to the Who's Who podcast. Uncover the powers and weaknesses of the Super Friends so that I may destroy them.
Aquaman and Superman, Animal Man and Plastic Man, Firestorm and Nuclear Man, Batman and Hawkman, 2D Man and Hour Man.
Who are all these people, man?
They're all part of the DC Who's Who. Ultra Boy and Mr. Gold, Lightning Lass and Hippolyta, Phantom Stranger, Etrigan and Arisia and Woody Winks.
Hey.
What?
What about that one guy?
What guy?
Mr. Pretzel, Mr. Lipstick, Mr. Mitzelfuzzle?
Mr. Mitzi's Pitlick?
Yeah, him.
He's also part of the DC Who's Who.
Who's Who, the definitive podcast of the DC Universe.
Available monthly at Aquaman Shrine, Firestorm Fan, and on iTunes and Stitcher as part of the Fire and Water podcast.
Okay, so what do you got next?
Well, I mean, one thing that... Did you ever have a My Buddy?
No.
Well, you know, that was one of those cases that was kind of weird. They did My Buddy, which was, you know, actually the doll I think they based Chucky off of.
It was.
But I had a My Buddy doll, and I didn't want kid sister. I wanted My Buddy, and I actually still have My Buddy to this day because I got it towards the end of... You know, it came out later, and so I took better care of it and kept it and everything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was one of those things that I thought was neat.
I remember the commercials. Everybody remembers that jingle, you know. My buddy
and me.
Yeah.
My buddy. Wherever I go.
My Buddy from Play School.
And, Andrew had it.
Yeah, Andrew played with him.
And that actually led to a funny story. Our friend Greg was over one night, and Andrew was off in another room, and he looked into Andrew's room as he was, like, going down the hall, and he saw the My Buddy laying in the floor face down. And And Greg never gets
excited
about nothing, but he's like, oh my god. and I'm like, what? And I run in there and he's like, gah. And I'm like, dude, that's my buddy. He thought it was Andrew face
like,
down on the floor. And it's like, remember my buddy? This is my buddy. And he's like, oh man.
Poor Greg.
Thank God it wasn't Chucky, you know.
Yeah, for
but
real.
Yeah, that was what Chucky was based on. Very, and they didn't hide it very much. I forgot what Chucky was. He was called something similar in the movie before they called him Chucky. It's like I forgot what it's called. I haven't seen those movies in years, but yeah, it was kind of a twisted version of my buddy. But yeah, I remember the my buddy commercials and the kid sister, and I don't know. I was a little too. You know, being a boy, I guess I felt like I was a little too old when those came out for a stuffed doll. You know, if I'd been like 5 or something, I probably would have wanted one. But they came out with those right around the same time they came out with freaking Power Wheels. And I was too big for them. I'm like, oh, now you come out with freaking battery-powered cars for kids to drive. My cousin Josh had one. I'm like, I can't fit in that, can I? No, I can't fit in that. Dang it. Like, I don't want to break his car. God dang it, I want to drive that. but I didn't have my buddy. But you still got yours, so that's cool.
Now, I mean, as far as, you know, two other toys I'm going to mention, then I will be done. As far as, you know, recollection stuff that I've got that are Care Bear, two rainbow things, Care Bears and Rainbow Bright. Because they're both, you know, all, you know, not the Rainbow Bridge of Asgard, but they both live over the rainbow cloud and, you know.
Gotcha.
You know, so colors and all that good stuff. And I had several Care Bears when I was little, the little plastic ones. And I think I might have had one little small plush one. And then I always wanted Rainbow Bright, but I never had it when I was little. And I still don't have one. I've never had a Rainbow Bright.
Oh, the original one? Oh, okay. I thought you did.
Nope.
Oh.
Never had one. I like the cartoon. I like, you know, they did a couple storybooks and stuff, so. But the Care Bears, I mean, I remember one time we went to Lexington, and there was a book about Care Bears, and I wanted it, and I asked my mother, and she's like, no, Cindy, we're not buying the book, you know, we can't do that. Well, I'm kind of squirrely, and, you know, I'm a daddy's girl, still am. And I went to my dad, and I was like, Daddy, I really like this book. Can I please have it? And Daddy just put it on the counter and just looked at my mom. I mean, you know what? I still have that book.
Yeah, that's how you play your parents, yeah. So.
And, I mean, he just looked at her. He didn't say a word or anything like that because he was off, like, in the tools and stuff when Mommy told me no. And this was back when, you know, you could let your kid wander a little bit.
Yeah.
And I went and found him. And, you know, I was like, Daddy, I really want to buy this book. I think we were in Sears or JCPenney or something like that.
Mall stores.
Yeah. And I was like, Daddy, I really want to buy this book. And I didn't tell him that Mommy had already said no. And that, you know, Daddy just went and just put it on the counter.
That's the old kid. That's like, well, what did your mom say? I didn't ask her, or, you know, you were hoping they wouldn't say that so you wouldn't have to tell them, you know.
Well, no, I wouldn't have lied.
No, but, yeah, that's cute. That's a nice little story. So the next thing I got is, unfortunately, usually known as Superpowers Redheaded Stepbrother, that's Secret Wars, Marvel Superhero Secret Wars. They came out the same year, and, you know, there's just no comparison. I'm sorry. I mean, I liked them. I had them. They're nice little figures, but the funny thing was, years later I found out Mattel had pitched Mattel, Kenner, and Knickerbocker, which made the Annie toys. Did they make the Annie toys?
Mm-hmm.
And they made a few other things. I think, did I make the Lord of the Rings toys from the cartoon? I don't know. I can't remember. But they were a player there briefly, and they made they all pitched to DC to get their license once Mego went under. And they had Mattel had pitched the idea of, like, secret shields or some kind of flasher thing like they ended up using in Secret Wars to DC, and they're like, nah. And, you know, Kenner had pitched the superpower power action thing, and they made it work, and so they went with them. So Mattel took their
idea
over to Marvel. And Marvel said yes, and not only that, they built the Secret Wars comic miniseries around it. And that Secret Wars, the toy line, it's kind of weird because the toy line, in a way, a lot of the time gets forgotten, but it kind of started the Secret Wars, the comic series, started the whole comic book crossover thing. Because there was a 12-issue Secret Wars miniseries, but there were a few issues of the comics that tied into it. Like the first issue, all the Marvel characters went to this this big structure, appeared in Central Park, this alien-looking structure. They all entered it and disappeared. And so they got taken to the Beyonder world, and they battled good versus evil. It was kind of like a Star Trek episode, see which one was, he didn't understand, the Beyonder didn't understand the concepts of good and evil, and see which one won out, blah, 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 it's like the Savage Curtain, all over, or Arena or something all over again, Star Trek. And so then there was an issue where they were, the heroes were gone, and then the next issue they all came back. So there were about three issues where it directly tied into what happened. So even though the toy lines kind of gets forgotten compared to superpowers, in a way it affected the comic industry more because it started that whole, everybody has to have a crossover at least once a year, and not only a big miniseries that's got everybody in it, but it has to tie into the titles. The Secret Wars figures themselves, the features and everything were well sculpted, but they kind of went a cheap route in a way because they have like certain body parts they reuse, like Cap and Magneto had the same arms, Captain America and Magneto, and they all had the secret shields, and they never gave Captain America a regular shield. You'd get this shield that had this like grooved piece of plastic in it, and you put these little insert pictures in there, and when you tilted the shield, the image was supposed to change back and forth, and sometimes it worked and a lot of times it didn't. But it was supposed to be the idea that they sent these messages over the secret shield. It was just a little too high concept, really. I mean,
a bunch of little kids. The
kids would have been happy just to have cool Marvel figures, I think. What really kind of hurt that line, they had a really cool playset in the... they come out with the Tower of Doom, because Dr. Doom was the big bad guy.
Oh, okay. The
leader of the bad guys. But they actually... didn't come out with a good guy playset until the second year, which is just weird. But they had some... The first series, they kind of had some decent choices. They threw Wolverine in there because, he was starting to be popular. That was like the first Wolverine figure. And they gave you Spider-Man and Cap. And they gave you Iron Man, which was kind of a... it's not like today where Iron Man's one of the most popular characters.
Yeah, but that's fairly recent.
Yeah, that's just since the movie.
Yeah.
And... but then the second year they just started, like they gave you Baron Zemo, which is cool to have Baron Zemo, but he was barely in the miniseries or the sequel miniseries at all, that I remember. And then you had, they never gave you a Thor or a Hulk, which is just, they did a Marvel line and didn't make the Hulk. I mean, the Hulk still had a cartoon on and reruns of the TV show, it was just bizarre, what they did. But one cool thing about it is in the Secret Wars, when Spider-Man came back from the Secret Wars in his comic, he had the black costume, introduced the black costume, and Spider-Man number 252, I think. And he, they didn't, the way the Secret Wars miniseries, it was still running even though they'd come back, it was telling you what had happened to him while they were gone. And in issue number 8, you got the backstory where he got the alien symbiote and all that. But in the second series of the toys, they actually came out with a black Spider-Man. So pretty much, right after they come out with him in the comics, boom, you had him in that suit. And, that was unheard of. The toy line was almost synced up with the comic, And that was the kind of corporate synergy you see them try to do nowadays. But that was 1984, and they made it work.
Right.
So it was cool to see. But, I never had all the Secret Wars. They kind of got hard to find after a while. I never got the Falcon, which I wanted. I think the last two figures I got were the Black Spider-Man and Daredevil. But, we'd mix them in with the superpowers, and they were the same size, even though their style was a little bit different. But they were cool figures. But they just, you know, unfortunately, because they came out the same year, because before DC and Marvel had been under one toy line in Captain Action and in Mego, this was where they split. You know, this is where they started being in separate toy lines. And, you know, it just gets compared to superpowers, and it always kind of gets dogged because everybody, it's, you know, superpowers just a superior product.
Right.
You know, whether you like the characters better or not, you can't deny the superpowers figures look nicer. They're made better. They're more attention to detail. And so they just kind of, they are the redheaded stepchildren or stepbrother of superpowers. So. What about that, you were talking about, what about that weird little toy line that you brought up a while back, that Seaweeds or whatever, were they little?
Oh, Seaweeds.
Seaweeds, okay.
Yeah. And, you know, I had a couple of those when they came out and stuff. And they were just cute little, you know, multicolor haired little mermaids. And they came with a little pet. And you could play with them in the bathtub. But the bad thing was, is, you know, like with anything, especially plastic that you play in the bathtub, eventually it'll get molded, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think that's what happened to a lot of the original ones. And, I mean, I've got a couple that I've bought, you know, from eBay since then, but I certainly don't have my original ones.
Right.
So.
Yeah. That's the thing, you know, a lot of bath toys, you had to watch them, you know, keeping them in there and playing with them too much. Cause I used to take my superpowers Aquaman and the G.I. Joe Frogman in the bathtub. Yeah. And in the swim kiddie pool and things like that and play with them. And you had to be careful, or if you left them around too long, yeah, they could get nasty, and then you have to throw them out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I always liked, now one other thing that I really liked was Little Kittles. Do you remember those?
Mm-mm.
Little Kittles were these itty bitty dolls. They were only maybe 2.5 inches tall, maybe. And I remember I loved them because I would get those every so often, you know, if I'd been really good or something like that, because they would make them. There were this little doll that came in a little plastic case that you could wear as a necklace.
Or as
a purse. Or they were in soda pop, you know, in a little plastic thing that looked like soda pop, or, you know, all different kinds of things. And I actually have a picture, and I ended up rebuying it off of eBay. For my 4th or 5th Christmas, there's a picture of me, and I was so excited because it's an ice cream. It looks like an ice cream that you open up, and the ice cream is probably about 8-10 inches tall.
Yeah.
And you open it up, and it's a little play set for a little kittle.
Oh, okay.
And it's ice cream. You know, it looks like an ice cream sundae.
See, I knew you had some of those in your collection, but I thought those came from, like, the 60s.
Well, they've been made since then. And I don't know, honestly, if what I had were actually little kittles. They might have been called something else by then, but that's what they were grown from.
Oh, okay. So. Gotcha. I see. I didn't
realize. Same idea, or they might have been a clone or what have you, gotcha. But that's, you know.
That's the same.
There was an 80s, you know, revisited.
Right. There's a lot, you'll see that a lot. Toy lines will come back and, like, they've redone Creepy Crawler several times and things like that.
Care Bears, Strawberry Shortcake, yeah. You know, all that stuff has been back out.
And it goes away, and then it comes back again.
Yeah, about every 15, 20 years. There was a Rainbow Bright set of dolls that came out about 3-4 years ago. And they basically took Rainbow Bright and made her Barbie-esque.
Yeah.
And I bought that, and I bought the horse for Danny. And Danny plays with it, but not, you know, because it's Rainbow Bright. It's just because it's another Barbie for her Barbies.
Right, right, yeah. And, of course, they bring G.I. Joe back, and off and on over the years and different things like that. But yeah, there's constant recycling in toys. Speaking of recycling, that segues nice into the next one that was big in the 80s that I was interested in was the Transformers. And it was actually recycled from, like, I think 2 different Japanese toy lines. They're made by Takara. And Takara had actually made the Microman line in Japan, and then Mego had rebranded that as Micronauts. So interesting to see, if Mego hadn't went under in the 80s, would they have eventually brought out the Transformers in one way or another? Who knows? But Hasbro brought them out. And the thing about Transformers was they were expensive. The main characters that, you know, they, after the success with G.I. Joe, they had the Marvel comic for Transformers. They had a mini series for Transformers. And they kind of came out of the gate. You knew who the important characters were, and like characters like Megatron and Optimus Prime, they were like high ticket items. You had guys like Bumblebee; they were like little mini bots. Those were affordable. They were cheap. They were about the price of a G.I. Joe figure. And I had quite a few of those, but because I was too busy collecting other lines or buying other lines to play with. But I did, another one of those weird, don't know why I got it cases was there was the Ben Franklin's downtown, which we had, they had a toy land in the basement. And that was that. I mean, literally, it was like walking into a kid's dream. Down, you go down the stairs, and I could still see myself walking down those stairs into the toy land. But they would put, you can't imagine this now, but they would put the, they had storefront property, so they would put their toys in the window, and they had Optimus Prime like sitting in the window in the box. I was like, oh man, I want that. And I don't know why, but one day my mom came home and gave it to me. I don't know why, but spoiled. She just randomly do that sometimes. I don't know why. It was pretty expensive. I mean, I don't know how expensive it was, but it was definitely more than I could swing on my allowance or whatever, mowing yards and stuff. So, Optimus Prime was my favorite one. But, and again, I was Optimus Prime because I was a leader character, so I was Optimus Prime. Now, superpowers, I wasn't Superman. I wanted to be Batman, but of course. So, Transformers, the cartoon was cool. I didn't like the Marvel comics so much. I always kind of thought it was just kind of eh. My friend had Megatron. I never had him, but he was a pretty cool, actually a pretty cool figure. The thing about Transformers that was kind of weird was, I don't know, I guess, it seemed like they came out at the same time, but we talked about GoBots earlier. I had more GoBots than Transformers, but the thing about GoBots was, even though they weren't as cool looking as Transformers for the most part, you could get, like, the main characters from the GoBots for that cheap mini-bot price, like, Leader One was the leader one. Real inventive guys. They were made by Tonka, but they were about the price of the mini bots and Transformers, so you could have the main guys from that series cheap. You could pick them up and get them easier and have more play value than you could with Transformers. The cartoons were miles apart. Like Hanna-Barbera did the GoBot cartoon, and it was definitely felt like a 70s 80s Hanna-Barbera cartoon, whereas the Transformers and G.I. Joe were done by Marvel Animation, and it felt more, again, more, a little more edgy, more action-oriented, a little, it was just hipper. I don't know how to, other way to say it. You just, the GoBots by comparison just seemed kind of eh, I watched it, but it wasn't nearly as cool. Transformers kind of hit its peak when the Transformers the movie came out. That was a big deal, not the Michael Bay live action / CGI movie, but the animated movie, because the advertisements for it had everybody pumped up. They showed all these new Transformers. They asked, does Optimus Prime die? Spoiler warning, he does, which is really this big, huge, epic battle with him and Megatron, and Prime dies, and they get a new leader and all this stuff. And it pretty much like ends the Transformer story, but then they had to do another season anyway. So rather than set it back in the past, they stayed in the future where the movie was set, and kind of just, I don't know why they did that. But one of the first albums, and it was an album that I bought myself that wasn't some kind of, Power Record type album, was the Transformers movie soundtrack. And I still have that. And you got things like, the song everybody always talks about, The Touch, from that. from that, which unfortunately was the song Dirk Diggler sang in Boogie Nights, Mark Wahlberg. So it's kind of gotten tied up in that.
Oh, I didn't know that. Why'd you do that?
I know. It kind of ruined that song, but it was just pure, you know, 80s epic rock cheese. But Transformers was also one that I kind of hung on to toward the end. I actually remember getting the Autobot City, and I think it was the Decepticon City that they put out the last year that I bought them, and I got them for Christmas, and I basically played with them a couple times and then sold them. I sold them at a yard sale. I actually sold them for a decent price because I had them in a box, but those Transformers in a box now are just like insanely high because of this. You've got just a big fan base for them, and the parts are so tiny and small and breakable, and so a lot of people, the only way to really get one in really good shape is to get one in the box. So, you know, it's like that's one thing actually where I kept the box, and that's stupid to me, so sold it at a yard sale, but what are you going to do? So, you got anything else?
No, I'm good.
Are you good? What about My Little Pony? Didn't you have some My Little Ponies?
Just a couple.
Really?
I mean, you know, like I said, at my house, you didn't get a whole lot of toys. I mean, and I had some, and I had, you know, some of the major ones and stuff like that. But, you know, I had a couple of My Little Ponies, and, you know, like to brush their hair again.
Just like the jingle said.
Yeah, brush their little hair and all that good stuff. So.
Yeah, I remember, you know.
I had the blue one with pink hair, and she had pink bows on her tushy.
I don't know.
On her hind quarters or whatever.
I remember the commercials, and I remember the cartoon being on in between other cartoons, but, you know, obviously sorry, bronies, it wasn't aimed at me. So I wasn't into it. And I remember that, and I remember Jim being, you know, advertised and being on. I think literally it was on in between Transformers and G.I. Joe or the other way around. I mean, it was, you know, there was G.I. Joe, then Jim, then Transformers or something like that. It was in the middle of those two. I remember having to, like, either flip the channel, which you didn't have that many back then, of course, or, you know, kind of do something while Jim was on.
See, I always thought Jim was kind of dorky. I mean, I'm just like, okay, just because she puts on makeup, she becomes cool. I mean, I don't get it. To me, that concept didn't get. I was just like, I never wanted the gym dolls. I always wanted, and I never have got one. Hint, hint, hint.
Okay.
My birthday's coming. Mother's Day coming.
Yeah.
Spectra. For whatever reason, Spectra, the body's metallic.
Okay.
And I always just thought she was cool looking.
Was she supposed to be like an alien?
I can't remember.
A robot or something?
I can't remember. I just remember wanting one because I thought she was cool looking.
Who made it? Mattel make it?
Mm-hmm. It's a Mattel product.
Mm. She looks like the chicks from the old heavy metal cover or something.
I mean, they're like pink metal and blue metal, and the hair's got metallic strings through it. And I just always wanted one when I was
You're going to have to show that to me because I don't think I know what you're talking about there.
Oh, yeah. Spectra.
Mm.
Subtle hint.
I hate to admit this, but wasn't Spectra the name of the bad guys on Jim or something? Or wasn't it something like that? Or
No.
Okay, I'm getting that
was something else, yeah.
I'm getting that confused. I don't know. I just, you know, I remember it was on, and I remember she went to a computer and
Synergy.
Did something. That's what it was, and it turned her into something. I do remember that.
Her name was Jerrica when in her regular form, and then she became Jim.
And she did all that. She transformed just to become a rock star.
Yeah.
That's kind of...
That, again, lame. I'm sorry.
You're going to get a lot of hate mail now.
I really don't care.
Well, speaking of... And I was going to bring this up. One thing that... When we were talking about He-Man. You know, as much as I loved He-Man, and I am one of the staunchest defenders of the whole Clark Kent disguise thing, because I believe Christopher Reeve proved it'll work, that Superman could disguise himself as Clark Kent, and even people wouldn't, you know, question why would you ever question this guy being Superman. But He-Man, I think they really should have rethought, you know, redesigning Prince Adam as a smaller character in the cartoon.
Oh, it was just him with a spray tan.
Yeah, when he turned into He-Man, he had a spray tan and an echoey
voice. Fewer clothes
and an echoey voice. You know, but I mean, you know, you lived to see the scene where he, you know, said by the power of Grayskull and, you know, went through the whole thing. But
I don't know. That was one of those. I mean, did you ever have cartoon crushes?
Yeah.
I mean, that was one of those things. I never had a crush on He-Man, but I did on Lionel from the Thundercats.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, Thundercats is one I didn't think to talk about. I think I really only had Lionel, but I liked the cartoon, you know, and the cartoon was well made.
And I always liked Chitara.
Yeah. Oh, I liked Chitara. That's one of the crushes I had was her, and I liked Teela. The Filmation women always were like Teela and the women in the Flash Gordon cartoon, which I don't have have vague memories of that, but, and even Batgirl, like on the 60s and then the 70s Batman cartoon. I don't know, maybe it's because they reused the same stock footage over and over, so you've got really good drawings of them, more than Hanna-Barbera, where they, you know, where they redrew it almost every time, but they were really... They just knew how to draw really good-looking women, attractive women, you know. And you know, Teela kind of did it for me, you know, on the He-Man cartoons. Not so much She-Ra. I like Teela better than She-Ra. I don't know what it was, but anyway. Okay, now we've gotten creepy enough. The last one I'm really going to talk about was kind of a personal favorite of mine. It's not quite as remembered. It's not nearly as well remembered as G.I. Joe or Transformers, but that's M.A.S.K. which is an acronym for Mobile Armored Strike Command, if you spell command with a K like you're not supposed to. But M.A.S.K. was really cool because it kind of combined superhero elements with Transformer-like things in a kind of a James Bond-type atmosphere as well, because you had, just like all the... One thing I think if you really think about it, all the 80s toys, the boys' toys, you had to have... you had to have like that built-in play value of a villain. I think that was something that was kind of new. I mean, the heroes, like the Mego superheroes had, you know, they had the Joker and Riddler and stuff, but they didn't have like a villain organization. I mean, if you watch the Super Friends cartoon, you can say, okay, it's the Legion of Doom, but you didn't hire probably any of the members. But starting with, probably because of the Star Wars influence, because you had the Galactic Empire and you had Darth Vader and, you know, all that stuff, but, you know, you had Cobra, you had the Decepticons, you know, so even the Superpowers guys had Darkseid. You had that central bad guy and his flunkies, you know, Skeletor, you know, and all his flunkies. So with M.A.S.K., you had the bad guy was named Miles Mayhem, and you know, he had a jet that turned into a helicopter, and the leader, Matt Tracker, had a Camaro that the doors popped up like a DeLorean and it flew, you know, which I thought was just awesome. Because, you know, I mean, what was cool about M.A.S.K. is you saw, like, a red Camaro driving around town. You saw a purple rig, and you thought that could be the Rhino rig. You know, there was a cool element of everyday thing, kind of like Transformers, but I don't know, it just seemed a little more feasible that it might not transform into a sentient robot, but... Maybe that Camaro could fly. You know, I don't know. It's to a kid, it just seemed more plausible. And they had the masks that did cool things. And the cartoon was actually pretty good. I liked it at the time, even though they did add the Tracker's son and the robot, T-Bob, which were kind of, yeah, they weren't as lame as some of the add-ons. I mean, they got into things, but it wasn't too bad. There was one cool thing I liked that they did that was really one of those tease things that got a kid's mind going, even though they were never going to do this, but they did a few commercials for that line where they would show, like, you never saw their face, but they'd show live-action actors, and they showed just enough of the vehicles that, like, they'd show the back end of the Camaro going over the jets that, you know, popped out to fly, and they showed, like, the 57 Chevy that turned into, like, a tank-like thing rolling out of a garage.
Tracker here. Assemble masks. When Venom strikes, there's only one team to call. Mask. Where illusion is the ultimate weapon.
Get away, Hondo! Firecrackers confirmed! Great McClane!
Fire! Vehicles each sold separately with a figure.
You'll never catch the vampire. Whoopsie! I'll fly convert!
Mask. Where illusion is the ultimate weapon. Mask, Firecracker, Vampire, and Firefly. Each sold separately, new from Kenner.
And I mean, it just made you think, like, oh, they could make a movie. or a TV show or something, but of course they never did. But the really crazy thing, Mask is one of those lines that suffered from retooling. At some point, you know, they decided to take the whole concept of Mask versus Venom. I always thought it was a little too close to Cobra, but, you know, whatever. And they decided to change it from them just being, like, fighting each other to them racing each other. And I'm like, okay. They established in the mini comics that came with the figures that the DC had produced for them that, like, Miles Mayhem had killed Matt Tracker's brother or something. And now he's going to race this guy? I mean, that's just, that was kind of like, okay, how dumb do you think we are?
Yeah.
It's like, and that was right as I was getting too old to really be into it anyway. So it didn't take much for me to kind of walk away from that. Because they even did, I think they did some cartoons where they were racing, and it was just, the series changed to that too. And I was just like, oh, okay, I'm done. Maybe it's time to put this stuff away, you know? So Mask and G.I. Joe and Transformers was the last ones I kind of held on to. And it's really surprised me. They've come close to bringing Mask back in a few times, but they never called it Mask. There was something called, in the early 90s, Kenner did, called Shadow Strikers or something. And it had the little, I think, like, however tall the Mask figures were. They were like 2 inches, 2.5 inches tall. They were much shorter than like a G.I. Joe. So they could make the vehicle smaller. But they came back out with figures that were that small in vehicles that changed. They didn't call it Mask. Did the same thing after Hasbro bought out Kenner in the later 90s, or maybe early 2000s, called Vortech or something. And it had a Mask vibe, but they never brought Mask back other than they put Matt Tracker in the G.I. Joe line.
Right, that's what, about 2 years ago?
No, it was in the 25th anniversary line, so it's probably been like 5 or 6 years ago now.
Oh my.
Yeah,
okay.
It's time flies, yeah. So, but it was cool to see him, and I got him. I just couldn't stand it. I had to get him.
I know.
But it was cool to get him. And they did a good job on it. I was hoping they'd do more, but they ended up just kind of squelching that line anyway to do the movies, which the less said about the G.I. Joe movies, the better. The second one's not bad, but the first one's just, ugh. But they're both just kind of out there. But, you know, but, well, that's, I think that's all I got on, that pretty much carries me through all the 80s toys that were the most important, you know, to me as a kid growing up.
Me too.
So, yeah, I got out of it right before, like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles came in. And I remember getting a book. I got out of toys and, like, almost immediately decided, I'm going to collect toys. I'm going to collect superhero toys. And I picked the absolute worst time in history to decide to collect superhero toys because there were none out. Between 1986 and 1989, there were absolutely no superhero toy lines out, which is hard to imagine now. But, so I had seen, I was getting Comic Buyer's Guide, and they advertised this book called Greenberg's Guide to Superhero Toys. And it was like going to be $35. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's high. But it was supposed to have all these great pictures of these toys. So I ordered it. When it came in, it was a very nice looking book and had some nice pictures. And it gave me a lot of, you know, information I didn't have before. But I would find out years later that there's a lot of
misinformation,
incorrect information in that book. And I mean, they were saying things like, you know, there was a green Pocket Heroes Green Lantern by Mego that never existed. The Mego 8-inch Green Goblin came with a glider. I mean, things like that. But it did have a preview of the Ninja Turtle figures, like, before they came out. And I'm like, and I knew who the Ninja Turtles were. I hadn't read their comic, but I knew who they were. And it's like, they're going to be a cartoon, and this is going to be big. And I'm thinking, I don't know about that. But, oh, man, I was wrong, because pretty soon I was watching Ninja Turtles, even though I wasn't buying the toys. I still watched the cartoon, went and saw the movies. And
go, Ninja! Go, Ninja! Go! Go! I'm sorry. Had to.
Hey, I know. Well, and now we know that Vanilla Ice actually collects Ninja Turtle stuff.
Yeah.
It was on
the
Toy Hunter a few
That's
weeks
right.
ago. But which is cool, you know. I mean, you can say what you want about Vanilla Ice and beat him up, and maybe he deserves it, but you gotta give the guy credit. He owns up to to his past, and he's not ashamed of it, you know. And
besides that, he was smart and apparently invested his money.
Yeah. So that'll do it for our trip back to the 80s toy box.
So on our next episode, we're going to be talking about two of our favorite comic book miniseries from the 80s.
Mine, The Legend of Wonder Woman by Trina Robbins and Kurt Busiek.
And mine is The Untold Legend of the Batman by Len Wein, John Byrne, and Jim Aparo. And these are kind of like lost miniseries. They don't get mentioned a lot. They're pre-crisis in a way. The Wonder Woman's post-crisis. A strange little story in between the pre-crisis Wonder Woman series and the post-crisis George Perez series.
However, by them doing this, it meant that this was continuously published. There wasn't a break in publishing.
Right, which I've heard that they kind of had to do that because of the deal with the Marston
family.
Estate, Marston, the creator of Wonder Woman. And The Untold Legend of the Batman is just it's a nice combining of all the different separate elements of Batman's origin that have cropped up over the years, and they put them all together and in a narrative format. It's really neat. So we'll be talking about those.
We've got some comments, and we are going to read those on air, but and respond to them. And we appreciate all the support. People have been playing our trailer, which is great. And of course, we will return the favor, and we have been. And that's, I really like that about the podcasting community, that that people play each other's trailers and promote each other. It's really great. People have been very supportive. But we'd really love to have some more in-depth comments. If you're listening to the show, you know, even if it's just a sentence or two, just write us, let us know what you think. If you've got an opinion, you know, like, oh, I saw Captain America Winter Soldier and it sucked. Well, first you're wrong, but let us know anyway. But, you know, 80s toys, what did you have? What did you not have? Did you play with your toys the way we talked about? Did you do other things that were cool? Did you lose a toy in some weird fashion? You know, let us know. We'd just love to talk about it on the show and kind of get a conversation going. So that'll do it for now, and we'll see you guys later. Bye.
Supermates is a Franklin & Franklin production in association with Bugaloo Enterprises Worldwide. The fictional characters and events mentioned in this show are trademark and copyright their respective owners. Likewise, all audio clips are copyright their owners, and we mean no infringement by either. Thank you for listening to Supermates, the husband and wife geek cast. You got the touch. You got the power.